Our first speaker, who is with the Revolutionary Communist Party, Mr. Carl Dix, who will share some perspectives on the U.S.'s racist war machine. Carl Dix.
Okay. I guess I didn't have much more benefit than Samari in terms of exactly how we was going to go at it. So what I was going to talk about was fighting the racist war machine. And we'll see which way I go on it. Okay, now, y'all know the deal in the Persian Gulf. You know that the war drums are beating real loud. 250,000 U.S. troops sitting in Saudi Arabia, poised to launch a military strike against Iraq. You got the powers that be saying that they need 100,000 more, you know, to do what they're going to do there. They got their ships there. Their Navy is there firing on cargo ships. The Air Force is boasting about how many casualties they can inflict upon Iraq once they're unleashed. Then on top of that, in the past few days, you got George Bush out literally trying to whip up a fever for an immediate military assault on Iraq. You know, talking about how Americans especially are being mistreated in Iraq and Kuwait and how his patience is wearing thin. Now, George Bush will tell you that this deployment is for defensive purposes, that he's trying to defend Saudi Arabia against an attack by Saddam Hussein, who he likes to call the Butcher of Baghdad, and other things like that, or to roll back his conquest of Kuwait. George Bush also seems to get off on calling Saddam Hussein some other names, dictator, gangster, more brutal than Hitler, all that kind of stuff. And then he condemns him for having used poison gas during his war with Iran and on the Kurdish minority in his own country. Now, George Bush will tell you all this like he expects you to believe it, like somebody should believe that George Bush, who was president when they invaded Panama and when they sent what they call military advisors to Peru, who was vice president when they invaded Grenada and when they bombed Libya a couple times, who was head of the CIA when he had his agents and international thugs overthrowing governments, assassinating leaders, and running drugs, they want you to think that a man like this is bothered by naked acts of aggression. I mean, he ain't been bothered by none of his own. Why would this bother him? See, but there is something about this that does bother him, and that is that somebody is challenging something that they think is theirs. They're there in the Gulf because they want to be the ones who control the shots there. They want to call the shots and say what goes down there. They want to control the wealth and the natural resources of that part of the world. They want to have their hands on the oil. And see, the way they're going to go about that is that they want oppressed people, like a lot of y'all out here, because I see a lot of young people out here, to put on their green uniforms, go off, kill and murder other oppressed people, and die maybe, to do all this for them. Now, anybody whose brains haven't been dyed red, white, and blue ought to see through this, ought to see that this ain't what they ought to be about. And that's what I want to get into. Now, in getting into this, I mean, I'm at a conference around Malcolm X. I can see that there are a lot of people here who checked where this man was coming from and what he stood for. So I know there's a lot of stuff I don't have to tell you because you already know it. I know that a lot of y'all already know that the Western powers created a lot of these pipsqueak countries that they call emirates in order to have somebody to administer their oil for them, that there wasn't any historical basis for a lot of these countries anyway. That Israel was created in that part of the world as an extension of Western imperialism to help hold people down, keep things in check so they could keep on stealing the oil out of that part of the world. That this Saudi Arabia that they want people to, you know, put their lives on the line to defend is a feudal monarchy where one of the princes might go to Europe and spend $1 million one night partying while the people there starve. The society where women don't even get to participate in what goes on in what's called social development there. And I know a lot of folks here also know that when Saddam Hussein invaded Iran, he did so with the backing of major powers, both East and West, U.S. bloc and Soviet bloc, because they were terrified of the impact of the Iranian revolution. And that when he used poison gas in that war and on the Kurdish minority, he did so with the backing of those powers, and that's why the world turned a deaf ear to all that at the time. See, because Hussein may be a gangster, but he's a little gangster, and George Bush is the international mafia don who's collected a big grouping of gangsters to go down over this is his turf, and he ain't going to let nobody take it from him, and that's what that thing is about. Now, I know a lot of people here are clear on that, so I'm not going to get into that anymore. I mean, you already knew that. And since this thing is about Malcolm X, you already know what Malcolm X told you when this question of war, and particularly war being called by the oppressors, came down. I mean, I don't have to tell you that Malcolm X told you that when your oppressors called on you to go off and fight for them, that your response needed to be, hell no, you wasn't going to go. I mean, he told you that. I don't have to tell you that Malcolm said when Massa in trouble, when Massa was sick, what you needed to do was hope he died, not help him get him some medicine or nothing like that. See, and I don't have to tell you that Malcolm said when the plantation was on fire, what you needed to do was not go get a bucket of water and try to put it out, but to pray for a strong wind. That's what you needed to be doing. Now, Malcolm already told you that, so I don't need to waste my time with that. Well, one more point that Malcolm already told you. He already told you that your oppressors will tell you to be nonviolent when you're fighting for your own interests, but when it's time for you to fight for their interests, they want you to be as violent as hell. He already told you that your oppressors tell you that, so I ain't gonna get into that. I don't need to waste my time with that. Instead, what I want to get into is something that we in the Revolutionary Communist Party call revolutionary defeatism. Now, and why it's important that people here in the belly of the beast adopt this stand towards the powers that rule over them. Now, when I talk about revolutionary defeatism, what I mean is that I want the U.S. to lose in the Persian Gulf. I want to see them get their ass kicked in the Persian Gulf. I want to see them get it kicked bad. And that's got to be your stand, too, if you're clear that these are oppressors. You got to want to see them get whipped, too. I mean, look. There has been formed something called the Stop the U.S. War Machine Action Network that's been formed to build resistance to this war buildup right now, and to be in position to jump things to a much higher level when the military conflict breaks out for real over there, and that's what they got the troops over there. Don't buy this stuff that it's over there just to make a point to Saddam Hussein. They got them troops over there to move in and take some folk out. You got to be a part of this network. You got to be hitting the streets in opposition to these war moves on the part of the U.S. You got to be doing everything you can to expose the reactionary nature of what they're doing over there in that part of the world, and to help cut the legs off of any public support that's out there for it. And you got to help build the dissatisfaction that's already growing up in their military, and I want to get back to that in a little bit. See, and you got to do that because we need a revolution to deal with the problems that we face here in the belly of the beast. And when I talk about revolution, I mean millions rising up, guns in hand, to overthrow these bloodsuckers that rule over us and going on to build a whole new society on the ruins of this foul one that we got here. That's what we need to do to end all this shit that we've been grappling with from day one, and that's what people around the world need, too, to end the degradation and misery that they're forced to put up with. Now, it ain't time to launch the all-out revolutionary assault. The powers ain't in deep enough trouble yet. And the people ain't at the point where they'd rather die than live another day under this kind of bullshit. But things are headed that way. And how we get things to the point where it is time to strike is through rallying people to hit back at everything foul that these powers do to people here and around the world. Everything foul, including their war moves in the Middle East. Now, that's what our party is out there doing. We're out there rallying people to do just that, to hit back at their attacks on people here, to meet these attacks in the Persian Gulf, to deal with them sending troops into Peru to try to crush the revolution there, everything that they've been foul. And see, doing this, taking all this shit on, deepens the trouble that these powers are in. And they're in trouble, and I want to get into that in a little bit too. And it also creates visions broadly throughout society among the oppressed of the possibility to, in the future, rise up and do them in and do some serious damage to them right here in the belly of the beast. Now, whenever I raise this question of revolution is the solution to all these problems, a lot of questions come up, but different kinds of questions. I mean, I do a lot of my speaking among people ground down. We call them the populist proletarians, people who never got nothing from this system but a hard time, and don't expect nothing from this system but a hard time. Now, when I tell them something like this, the biggest question they got is, how are we going to pull off this revolution that we need? Because they ain't got no problem with seeing the need for revolution. They want to know how we're going to pull it off. And some of them just want to know when we're going to get started. Now, in other sections of the people, the questions are more skeptical. People say, well, look, they've got a lot of military strength. How can you even talk about going up against them in that kind of way? Well, look, the situation in the Gulf points to why what I'm talking about here is possible. Because, see, yeah, it's true. These powers are armed to the teeth, and they prove every day to us just how vicious they are. But at the same time, they're in deep shit. They're stretched thin trying to meet global challenges in many different parts of the world, facing rebellion, upheaval, and revolution in different parts of the world, and facing challenges from rival bloodsuckers are out to grab just what they got, control of wealth and natural resources in different parts of the world. And see, we should not let these joint resolutions that these bloodsuckers pass in the United Nations Security Council blind us to what's really going on, because these imperialist powers, some of them are really trying to figure out how to use this crisis to get a leg up on the U.S. And what they're basically saying is that sometimes the way to get the best of somebody is to stand behind them, you know, when they get in trouble, and then try to pick up what's going down. See, because the U.S., in terms of this trouble that they're in, they're even being challenged by a small country like Iraq, a country that at times in the past they have backed up and you actually supported in doing some of their foul, dirty work. See, now, you look at this problems that they're facing all around the world, and a huge question for them is, what are oppressed and exploited people going to do right now in their time of trouble? I mean, that's a big question. Are people going to go with this stuff, or are people going to oppose them? Now, some people here might think that I was really out to lunch when I raised this question of the possibility of revolution in a country like this, but let me tell you, the powers that be certainly fear the possibility of the oppressed rising up. That's one reason why they're lashing out as viciously as they are right now. So there is a very real question for us. They're facing a potentially explosive situation in the Gulf. Tremendous turmoil and upheaval, possible defeats. How are we going to respond? And let me just put it just blunt, straight out. Are we going to go out like suckers? Are we going to buy this military buildup? Are we going to put on these uniforms and go off and fight for them? Or are we going to say, we ain't going to go off and fight for these guys. And in fact, what we're going to do is we're going to take this time to step up the struggle fighting against them. See, now, this question is not a new one for oppressed people. I mean, they have always called on the oppressed to fight their wars. You can go back to the first war that they fought, and they used black people, they used Indians to fight against the British, you know, to kick the British out of here. And then they, you know, but at the same time, they were enslaving African people. They were massacring the Indians to steal the land from them. So it ain't a new thing for them to use oppressed people, the very people that they're oppressing, to fight their wars for us. And in fact, at points in the past, they have even told us that if we fought for them, that would prove that we deserved equality. But look at what we've gotten for all those wars. Now, I know about this question of fighting for your oppressors because I was in their army. I only got a few minutes. I'm going to wind up on this point. I was in the army in the 1960s. They gave me orders to go to Vietnam. There were two things that helped me to do the right thing in that situation. One was I peeped what was the nature of the war they were fighting over there. Genocide. The way I was able to peep it was the brothers who went over there came back and told me what the real deal was. The second thing was I looked at what these bloodsuckers were doing to people right here in this country, and it convinced me that Malcolm was right when he said I could not fight for these oppressors, I had to fight against them. Now, let's look at the situation today. Are they going to turn the other cheek in their dealings with Iraq, or are they planning to unleash weapons of mass terror? I mean, that's clear. They are talking about, you know, surgical strikes with their plane, but their planes carry 2,000-pound bombs, and those are small ones. 2,000-pound bombs do not discriminate between military and civilian targets. They obliterate everything. I mean, they got weapons of mass terror pointed at people there, but they are also unleashing terror at people here. This war on drugs that they talk about, it ain't to stop drugs. It is about terrorizing oppressed people. It is about brutalizing, terrorizing especially oppressed youth, convincing people that they ain't got no win and no way to fight against this setup. They got concentration camps on the border with Mexico for immigrants fleeing their death squad regimes and the poverty and misery that they force people to deal with. See, now, with all that, I think what I got to say is that not only did I do the right thing back in the 1960s when I said I ain't going to fight for these oppressors, but that today the right thing for people to do is to unite with what Malcolm said. It is foolishness to fight for your oppressors. It is double foolishness to fight for them when they're in trouble. When they're in trouble, instead of helping them out, you should be helping to get them in deeper trouble and hoping that this trouble is fatal. That's what you got to be doing. And I know they might have some laws that say I ain't supposed to say that. Well, fuck it. You know, I gotta run down what the deal is. No, because see, it's getting late. Because, you know, people will say that people around the world are dying, and that's very real, and that's a very important reason why we gotta step up the struggle against these bloodsuckers. But the other thing we gotta grasp is that people are dying and being killed right here, and the same bloodsuckers are responsible for it, and that has gotta be the thing that drives our struggle. For our part in the Revolutionary Communist Party, we want people to see that in the Gulf, some of the conditions that can bring about potential revolutionary situation are being worked on. Powers are in deep trouble. They can be divided, fighting against each other. Also, and these are some of the conditions you need for successful revolutionary insurrection in a country like this. One is the powers being in deep, deep trouble, divided and fighting against each other. Another is mass upheaval and rebellion among the people, you know, in opposition to the situation. They get forced off into this war with Iraq, GIs coming back in body bags, the oil cut off. That will tremendously jolt their society. That will help to bring about their deep, deep, deep trouble. At the same time, there's going to be a lot of disgruntlement, upheaval among the people. And for our part, we in the Revolutionary Communist Party are out here trying to lead that upheaval and rebellion against the real enemies, the powers that be, as part of getting in position to do them in once and for all through revolution. And people who want to see that go down, who want to see these powers get the butt whipping that they so justly deserve, we call on people to check out the Revolutionary Communist Party, its youth group, the Revolutionary Communist Youth Brigade. Some of them are here, but they ain't got their uniform on, so it's hard to recognize them. But that's them over there applauding. And I guess I've used up my time there, right? So I won't go into the next point. I'll hold it for the discussion.